Welcome once again to The Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell Reed, and my co-host, Gwen Sheltimer. Each week, we visit with a local author. We give you an introduction to their work, a glimpse into their lives, ask them what prompts them to write, and we get an opportunity to hear them read from their work. Today, we're very pleased to welcome Helen Mason. Helen taught elementary school for 8 years and then taught all grades up to OAC as a supply teacher while she developed a freelance writing career, writing for magazines throughout North America and in Asia. She won the Gregory Clark Outdoor Writing Award for one of her articles and wrote a syndicated column on horses for several newspapers and on radio. She also recorded some special interest programs for radio and has scripted, directed, and edited educational videos. In 1988, she began editing and later managing the development of educational materials for use in schools. These included videos, books, teachers' guides, and online products. Besides the achievements I've just mentioned, Helen, you are the author of 21 books, 15 of them for children, and 5 of them published this year by Crabtree Publishing Company. These 5 cover a wide range of topics. Can you tell us how you chose these writing projects and what they're about?
Well, authors don't always get to choose the topic of a book that they write. For the first book, Weird Nature, the publisher contacted me from England, said that they had a book that they wanted to have written very quickly. Could I please do it? So it was about bugs. It's about weird animals. I love that kind of thing. I said, sure. For the second book, the one on the American Revolution, an American publisher contacted me. They were doing a series on the American Revolution. They had 6 titles. They asked me which ones I'd like to do. I chose 2 that included women, and I got to do life on the home front during the American Revolution because I'm interested in knowing what people who are not soldiers do during war. Women at home contribute a lot to all war efforts, and I wanted to make sure that I got that point across. For the other one, I did one on agricultural inventions. That is another book that's part of a series. Again, I was given a choice, and this book was on agriculture. I've owned a farm. I've run a farm for many years. I really admire farmers, and I find them interesting, so I chose that book. And again, it's a lot of fascinating information on the background of farming.
Yes. I know you love reading yourself and to read to others, especially children. You currently write a weekly column called The Reading Chair, which talks to adults about reading to children. The column appears on the Quinty West Public Library Facebook page and on the website Sounds for Fun. What advice do you give to adults who want to engage their children in reading and stories?
The reason I call that column The Reading Chair is because they need to start with a comfortable place to read. So I like to use a cozy armchair, rocking chair, could be a bed, some place where you and the child can cuddle up so that reading becomes a really enjoyable time. Mm-hmm. And then have fun. Have fun with the child that you're reading to. If they're very young, such as my grandsons right now are 20 months old, they don't have the attention span to listen for a full story. If I just read 2 pages and they pay attention then, and then their attention wanders, I just let it go.
Sound advice there. Okay, would you like to read to us from one of your books that have been published this year?
Sure. This is from Weird Nature, and it includes a series of 2-page spreads on different animals. Mm-hmm. This one is on bloodsuckers. Dracula and other vampires only exist in horror stories. But there are many animals that like to drink the blood of living creatures. Most are insects, but they also include the vampire bat, which only eats blood. Some blood-sucking animals pick on humans. They include bedbugs and ticks, which need human blood to grow and reproduce. Fleas use blood for food. The protein and iron in human blood helps female mosquitoes produce more eggs. Stable flies, horse flies, deer flies, sand flies, and midges all need to eat blood before they can reproduce young. But they do not need human blood. Any blood will do.
What age group is this one for?
This is actually written for children in grades 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very careful reading level. As you see, if you take a look, you'll see that there's a lot of big pictures here. So since bats are included as bloodsuckers, you see we've got an upside down, a vampire bat that's kind of hanging upside down, just digesting its meal. And here, the other picture is a very large picture of a mosquito where you can see the blood in its abdomen as it's sucking it in, and you can see that it's actually sitting on someone's arm. So some wonderful model volunteered for this shot. Here, mosquito, take a bite.
You know, it's very well set up, and in that little bit, you manage to get in a lot of information, but in a way that a child can absorb.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, why don't you read us the next bit?
So this one is about dung beetles, diet of dung. So dung or scarab beetles do not only live in balls of animal dung, they also eat it. Some species roll animal manure into balls which they bury. The beetles lay their eggs in the ball of dung. When the larvae hatch, they eat the manure. Dung beetles live all over the world. They can find dung almost everywhere, as you can imagine. There are thousands of species that exist on every continent except Antarctica. Some are a little bigger than a grain of sand. Others are about the length of your hand. There are three basic types of dung beetles, all named for how they treat dung: rollers, tunnelers, and dwellers. Rollers shape dung into smooth balls by rolling it back and forth on the ground. They bury the balls to munch on later to use as a nursery for their young. Tunnelers dig beneath a pile of dung to approach it from below. Dwellers actually live inside the pile of dung. Most dung beetles seem to prefer dung from omnivores, or creatures that eat both meat and plants. Among their favorite foods is human excrement. Delicious.
Thank you. That was fun. Nature is indeed weird. And now, would you like to read a little bit from Life on the Home Front during the American Revolution?
Yes. As I mentioned before, women actually do a lot of work during the wars. And these two excerpts are about women who are soldiers and women who were spies during the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. One of them was Deborah Champion, female courier. During the war, many ordinary people carried out brave deeds. Although Deborah Champion was not part of the army, she helped the Patriot cause. She was the daughter of Colonel Champion, one of three men in charge of supplying money and materials to the Patriot forces. The family lived in Connecticut. In 1775, Deborah Champion carried money and information through British lines to Boston. She was able to avoid suspicion from British soldiers because they thought she was an old woman because she was wearing a cloak and a bonnet. Champion was able to deliver $100 in colonial bills to George Washington and return home safely. Of course, $100 back then was a lot of money.
Yes.
This would have fed his troops.
Mm-hmm.
And during the American Revolution, George Washington's army often was starving, so that they needed to be fed. And then this is about Lydia Darrig, who was a Quaker and a spy. Living near the enemy, women could often keep an eye on troop movements and pass this information on to the Patriots. Lydia Darrig was a Quaker woman who supported the war effort. This is uncommon for Quakers whose religious beliefs reject war. When the British occupied Philadelphia, they took over the Darrig home. Since Lydia Darrig had nowhere else to go, she was allowed to stay. On December 2nd, the British used her home to plan an attack on Washington's forces nearby. Listening from a linen closet, Darrig collected details of the attack. The next day, she asked permission to go out to get flour, but she really went to alert Washington's army. He heard of the planned attack in time to prepare a defense. As a result, the attack did not go off.
Thank you, Helen. That was really interesting.
You're
Thanks
welcome.
Very much.
Lots
We're going
of
to take a short break now.
Yeah.